Welcome to Tennis.com podcast. I'm Nina Pantic, joined by a guest co-host, Matt Fitzgerald, and two very, very special guests, Bob and Mike Bryan. Do you want to tell us why you guys are in today?
Yeah, we have a little announcement here at the Tennis Channel. We're going live with Currier and Brett Haber, and we're going to announce that 2020 is our final season. So US Open 2020, we're going to zip up the rackets for the last time.
And we're here in the LA studio, so Tennis Channel is going to be breaking the news, which is awesome. What led to this decision? What were the lead up, and how did we get here?
Yeah, well, I mean, last year Mike had a great year. I was out on the sidelines, and we had a little doubt if we were ever going to play together again. And it was just been a whirlwind this year with me coming back and winning some titles with the hip, and we played a busy schedule. And after the Open, we wanted to just take some time, reflect on the career and rest our minds, and we thought we'd want to strengthen our bodies right now for one last run. We're feeling healthy, and we want to wrap up this chapter of our life strong and really, really fighting and competing for titles. We don't want to end our career on fumes.
Well, speaking to that, Bob, how meaningful is it for you after everything you went through with your hip to be able to have a say in writing this final chapter?
Yeah. I mean, I think had we together had the year that Mike had last year, we might have called it quits then and going out on top. But, injuring myself last year in Madrid, made me kind of think, let's try to rehab, let's have the surgery. And it gave me a new set of goals and new motivation to come back and finish this on our terms the way we want. And we've decided now, and we have clarity, that we're going to make the US Open our last tournament in 2020. And it's great to have a finish line and in sight and something to really push for.
Do you have a clear schedule of what tournaments you're going to be playing in 2020? Are you starting the Australian Open? Is there a plan?
Yep, we're going to start at the Aussie Open. We plan on playing the American tournaments, Indian Wells and Miami. I think we're playing Del Rey, and we're still going to discuss, see how we're feeling midway. I don't think we're going to be playing every tournament at 42 years old, but we're going to pick the places where we have the most special memories. We want to play all the slams. We just want to be healthy and feeling great so we can, play with the energy and passion that we had when we were little guys and we were fresh on tour. We want to kind of have that spill out to the fans. Thank them for supporting us for all these years. We've really loved our time the last 21 years on tour. I mean, we've spent half of our lives on tour and fulfilled all of our dreams and just had a great time doing it together. So, that's the plan for 2020. And hopefully we can finish strong. We want to play hard. We're working pretty hard in the gym right now and working on a few things in our game. And we don't want to limp across the finish line. We want to really play well.
Well, to that, you guys made your pro debut at the 95 US Open.
Yeah.
Doubles has gone through a crazy evolution through that time. There's been a scoring format change. A lot of teams are now playing behind the baseline. Is perhaps maybe coming through all of that to the other side and being the greatest of all time through those challenges maybe more significant than the records that you set in the process?
Yeah, we've actually never really taken a chance to really look at the trophies and the stuff we've achieved. We've always kept our head down and really been pushing hard and forward, looking forward to the next thing to improve and looking forward to the next workout. Doubles has, over the last 22 years, has really evolved. When we came on tour as the Woodies, they were chopping people up with their poaching and their finesse and just their expertise on doubles. Then Knowles and Nestor had an amazing partnership with also another lefty-righty combination. And then in 2005, doubles looked like it could be the end. There was a lot of rules that were taken, changed to get rid of the double specialist. Draws were going to be composed only of singles players. So that was a scary time. And we, with the help of some other doubles guys and my dad, filed a lawsuit. And we started doing some exhibitions around the country to raise money for the lawsuit and put an end to those rule changes. And that's one of the things we're most proud about is we were able to kind of turn the tide there and secure doubles kind of place in history. And here it is today, stronger than ever. But with that came a few rules changes. And, you know, now the scoring's different. As you can see, it's two sets and a super tiebreaker. And now the singles players can enter the doubles draw with their singles ranking. So with that change, it changed the whole sport. Now you have half the guys are serving and staying back and ripping ground strokes. And with the string and the technology, the returns are so powerful now that it's been a huge evolution in doubles. And within the last couple of years, it's been a really big shift towards I formation. So very rarely do you see teams playing straight up conventional doubles like we used to see in the 80s and 90s. It's a guy on top of the net in the middle of the court. So we've had to adjust our game, every year to stay relevant.
Is there maybe one player or tandem along the way that really you would go to bed at night and say, I've got to get this player, I've got to get this team, that pushed you to reach your peak level and actually hit a height that you maybe couldn't have imagined when you first started out?
Yeah, I mean, Danny Nestor was one of the top players when we turned pro, and he spanned our whole career. He retired last year at 46, and he had about 6 or 7 different partners that he was at top of the game with all of them. So he was the constant, amazing player, just awesome hands. He hit this lefty serve that you just could not read it. He'd just throw it up, and he could shape it any direction and any spin. And he played with, like, very little emotion. So he could be down 6-0, 5-0. He's got the same expression if he's up 6-0, 5-0. He just had this, like, cold-blooded expression. And just super talented, always rose to the occasion. We played him in a ton of big matches. He broke our heart a few times. I think we played him about 50 times, Bob. Was it 50 or?
I think it was 61 times.
Okay, 61 times. And I think it was 31-30. We actually
clipped him.
Edged him the last time. And then he retired, so we got him forever. But he was a great guy. I mean, everyone loved him on tour. He's actually one of the funniest guys in the locker room and one of the loudest guys in the locker room and one of the quietest guys on court. Never said a word.
Let's talk about the new baby. It's going to be an addition to the family. How is that going to impact 2020, the final year?
I'm psyched. The baby is due on my birthday, our birthday, April 29th, and super excited to be a papa. I think it's good timing, too. I'm winding up the career next year, and it feels like Bob was up 3 sets and a break. He had 3. I've watched him raise his kids. He's done an amazing job balancing the tennis and the kids. And, I felt like I've learned a lot in the process, so I can try to apply that to my kid. It's going to be just an amazing experience. I could see the love he has for his kids and the way he sees the world. It's totally different, and I'm happy to be in that place with him. And I think he'll kind of I can relate to him now. And see the struggle he has with balancing, putting everything into tennis, but also putting everything into his kids. And I could see it's not very easy. He's got 3 guys under 7, and they're running around, and they're crazy.
I think the kids, it helps you just see the world from a different place. It puts everything in perspective. You know, for so many years we've been going with our head down, worrying about the wins and the losses. And, you know, I think with a kid, it's just your life has a different purpose. You'll see that, you know, when you come off the court after a devastating loss and, you know, your boy's there to hug you and smile, he doesn't care if you win or lose. I think you'll see practices and matches a different way. You go hard in the practice, you give it as much intensity as you can, and then you leave it. You leave your work life and you go home, and you spread the love.
Yeah. Were you preaching to me a little bit?
Yeah, just giving just you kidding. A little heads up.
I was going to ask, Bob, do you have any like top 3 tips for a new dad on tour? Because there's a whole bunch of them that are being, like, we've got Ismer, we got Query. There's a whole bunch of people having kids. And do you have your top 3 tips?
I think you just go with the flow. You know, everyone's reading books on how to be the best parent, but everyone has their own style, I think. If you just give them a lot of love, let them make mistakes and learn from them, you'll be fine. You know, my wife and I are struggling every day trying to figure out, you know, the best way to raise our kids, and you know, we're learning something each day. But yeah, everyone's gonna have their own style. But if you give them love, you give them time, I don't think you can go wrong.
I want to make a big announcement really quick. So I went down to the Ventura County courthouse to pick up my birth certificate because I needed it for Nadia's immigration process, get her green card. And on the birth certificate, it said twin, but it said second. And so for these 41 years, I've thought I'm the oldest twin. And
this
we've
is
told
wild.
Everyone that I'm 2 minutes older than Bob. Bob's actually officially the older brother.
For six so hours, I've known. So but I've always known I'm the big dog.
A shock to the system. My parents were surprised. We were all just in shock. So, yeah, the big boy, he outweighs me. He's taller, and that's because he came out first.
Yep. I always knew you were the little biatch.
Your entire career, yeah. You guys didn't know that.
It was wild. It's a wild.
Your entire life.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, my parents messed it up. I guess they mix us up at birth.
I'm Bob. Maybe. I could be Bob.
You want to switch our names too?
We could.
It's not too late.
But yeah, that was wild. We were just looking at the birth certificate and it said second.
We got to check yours though. What if you're second also? So we just got
two number twos.
What if it's the typo?
Yeah, we'll see. We're going to confirm with my birth certificate back in Miami. My wife's digging for it right now.
Bob, I have to ask, you really set the gold standard on social media with Michaela all those years ago. A lot of people really look at what Serena's doing today, but the creative captions you had, are you going to look forward to maybe creating some time capsules in your final season now that you do have three kids who really understand what you do for a living?
Yeah, that was a blast. When it was just Michaela, she traveled all over the world. We had a lot of time on our hands. You know, one baby, as you're going to see, Mike's pretty easy. Once you get to three and you're outnumbered, you're screwed. But yeah, we love that Twitter. She had like 14,000 followers, and she was posting pictures, or we were, with you know, all the famous tennis celebrities, and we had funny captions. It was just a creative outlet for us during that time. But yeah, I'm gonna look forward to just sharing these moments with my family. I told Michaela, you know, the plans for retirement. She actually was crying, and she's like, you can still go back. If you're retired, you can still come back and play, right? I'm like, yeah, but it's pretty final. So she got emotional, which was a little sad, but I think she loves coming on the court after the matches and hitting the balls in the crowd. It's become like her routine. But yeah, they're going to come to as many tournaments as we can. We're going to share it as family. And then, yeah, we're just looking forward to meeting Mike's new little guy.
Yeah. Yeah. We're picking out.
Can you give us a name?
So it's between Luke or Jake or Blake.
Well, you're going for the American, like, yeah. Midwest names.
Yeah, yeah.
Nadia's going for a Slovakian
a country
name.
Singer.
She's going to go for, like, Pieter or Magnus.
That wouldn't sound good with the Brian last name. Pieter Brian? That just doesn't work. So we're going to keep it all American.
You're going for Luke. She wants Lucas with a Z.
Our kid's going to be eating a Cracker Barrel, Bob.
It is interesting, though, because your kids, Bob, have been their entire lives, you've been a tennis player.
Yeah.
But I think they'll realize quickly having you at home will be greater, having you around.
Yeah. No, the home routine's everything, just getting them in that, you know, school and after school activities. Right now they don't have a routine. You know, we're out the door. We're just in the Bahamas for a charity event. It's a lot of fun, but I think most kids, you know, get like that routine and that stability, which will be good for them. I think, you know, then we can really start chucking them balls, see if they like the tennis. Michaela loves music. We'll, you know, ramp up the music lessons and see where they want to go.
Well, speaking of music, the Brian Bros Band has been an integral part of your guys's kind of tour involvement in terms of helping to profile doubles away from the court. Are you going to be playing some gigs as you ramp up your final season in some of your favorite cities like Cincinnati or in Indian Wells or Houston?
Yeah, I mean, our two biggest gigs are the Houston gig and the Indian Wells gig. We've been doing those for over a decade now, and they've gained a little steam. Now Indian Wells at the food court, there's 4,000 or 5,000 people, and they're ready for it. We try to add a couple new songs each year just to keep them interested. But, you know, Jim Bogios from the Counting Crows is nice enough to join us on the road all the time. We just played a gig with James Valentine from Maroon 5. His guitar licks are pretty sweet, and we have fun with it. We've always traveled with our instruments. It's a great way to kind of get your mind off the rigors of the tour, and we're always going to have that in our life. And unfortunately, Mike's now living in California. You have a place in Florida too. I don't want to out you.
I'm more Florida than California.
Yes, probably. Yes, that's right. And so my jam buddy, after the tour, is going to be, we're going to have to find ways to get together, and he's my guitar guy. We need to find a way to keep the band together, but more music after tennis for sure.
I remember, I want to say it was 2009, and I think I snuck into a bar in LA to watch you guys play.
The Viper Room,
which is famous.
We're better now than we were then.
And it was Let It Rip was the hit. Yeah. And I liked it. I downloaded it on iTunes. Yeah. It was my first download. I paid for it, I think.
No, you didn't.
I think I paid 99 cents for it. I was committed.
I have 40 of those cents probably. Thanks for
giving me. We got 70, but we had to split it.
Yeah. So. But yeah, we thought we were going to be rock stars. We had our little album that we just recorded in LA, put our heart and soul. We had a five track EP, and it didn't tear up the charts.
The gross sales of that was 70 cents.
Maybe it's because I'm your only supporter.
Well, there's a little known song on there, a little track called Autograph. And at the time, it was Novak Djokovic and Annie Murray, but they weren't as famous back then. They were, Federer and Nadal were taking the headlines, so we got them to actually rap on this song. It's pretty funny, and now here they are, big. We should re-release it.
Yeah.
Then maybe we'd make more than 70 cents.
20th anniversary.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I think you guys can get whatever you want in this farewell tour. You guys can re-record maybe and get a little Rafa, or maybe there's somebody else that can sing, but you guys could probably...
We got some new material.
Yeah. I think we're better now. It's been 10 years. I was at the Viper. I was bluffing. I think I had my guitar turned off, so I was playing air guitar. So I looked like I was a rock star, but I was...
Is that true?
No.
No.
I was playing chords, knocking solo.
Good for you.
In terms of the farewell tour... When you look at each tournament you're going to, now we're back to tennis, I'm sorry. When you look at each tournament you're going to, the slams, what's your favorite memory from like the Australian Open? You think, what could top this top memory? What was your favorite moment?
It's for sure the 2006 match we played against Dam and Leander Paes. We had lost in the year, the 2 years before, 2004 and 2005. We came in, had never won there. Third year in a row in the finals, and we're in a barn burner. I think the women's match, there was a walkover or the match went quick. So it was a full house. Place was rocking. We were doing chest bumps. They were doing chest bumps. It was weird. And then Mike was down, I think, 7 or 8 break points in the final set on a serve. Battled through it. There was a big point where I did like a no-look volley behind Leander. There's nothing that can top that moment, winning our first one. And it was our third Grand Slam at the time. And then later that year, we won Wimbledon, which completed the career Grand Slam. So it was a stepping stone to getting all four. But it's been our most successful slam. I mean, 9 out of 10 years, we made the finals. We always kind of came into Australia with hope of a new season. We had worked hard in the off season. You know, we very rarely took days off once the season was over. We were always running in the gym and practicing together, which helps. I always had the number one player in the world down the hall. I could knock on his door and we can go out there and have a great practice. So we always came into Australia really sharp.
The U.S. Open, you guys have firmly stated here today that it is going to be your final tournament no matter what. Tons of memories to pick from there. Your last Grand Slam title as a team happened to be your 100th. What are you going to enjoy most about Flushing Meadows outside of it being kind of the last hurrah? What is it about New York, the fan experience, being on a big stage where tennis really is the center for those 2 weeks in the U.S.?
Yeah, we played our first U.S. Open in 1995. We won Kalamazoo as 17-year-olds, and we were 130 pounds. So I remember walking into the credential office and saying, hey, we're here. We're at the U.S. Open. And they're like, what are you doing? The ball kid's office is behind. Like, go sign up for being a ball kid. Go get your coupons. Yeah. And they wouldn't give us our badges until the actual draw came out. So we had to wait for the draw to be released because we didn't look like tennis players. We actually got kicked off the practice court like 2 or 3 times. But we were just watching every match. We were actually getting autographs in the locker room, which is a no-no. So we're just so excited to be, we're just had wide eyes looking up at the stadiums. Couldn't believe it. It was before Arthur Ashe was there. So it was just Louis Armstrong, played the current USTA president, Patrick Galbraith. That shows how old we are. And lost the first set 6-0. And I think we're down a break and we got a couple games and we're just stoked. But yeah, now 25 years later, we played our 25 opens and now we're playing 26 next year and it's just changed. It's the granddaddy of all the slams. I mean, the stadiums are huge. The place has expanded. I mean, for us being an American, it's our favorite slam. The fans are just off the charts. Just, they just bring the energy every time. So to go out there, that's where we want to do it. Some of our greatest memories. We've won 5 opens. So yeah, we want to play well there, but you know, we're looking forward to going back to New York and shutting it down there.
Just one quick follow-up, along the lines of that autograph theme. It's obviously a lot different in 2020, but is there anything you guys might be looking to collect along the way from fellow players, you know, other sports people exchange jerseys, kind of give little tokens or trinkets along the way? Is that a component that maybe would help kind of bring this all together?
Yeah, I mean, we're historians of the game. We have lots of stuff, you know, memorabilia framed and draws and towels. Like, we're big towel stealers. Wimbledon, we've hurt them for thousands of towels. We've hurt their bottom line. But yeah, you know, look, we're always keeping stuff that's going to, you know, bring back the memories. I have a closet full of rackets from big matches. You know, Federer was actually very nice to sign a bunch of rackets for our charity event last year. And, you know, all those players out there, Rafa and Fed, they're always willing to help out stuff for our foundation. So we're collecting stuff. But a lot of times now we're using it at auctions to raise money for kids.
You guys are always kind of considered as a tandem and a duo, but there was a period where you were playing a part. And I kind of on that note want to ask, Mike, what's the most proudest moment you've been what's the proudest you've been of Bob, of your brother?
We weren't playing a part because I was on the couch.
Yeah. I was proud of the way Bob handled everything. I mean, I jumped in my first Grand Slam or my second without him and ended up winning it, which was kind of a shock. And he was the first to call, and I could actually hear he's happy for me. When I think most brothers could be
faking it,
jealous. I might have been bluffing. But the way he just worked his butt off to come back and spend hours and hours in the gym and went through like a risky surgery, and it took. I mean, he came back into this year not as quickest. I would say you weren't that fast down in the
Aussie, 5 months is but still working on it.
By March, he was back to full speed and moving just as well as he had. And we won Miami, which is kind of a shock. He inspired Andy Murray to have the same surgery. He was talking to him every day, and now Andy's won a tournament. So he's blazed the trail for hip, what do you call those, prosthetics?
RoboCop.
Iron Man.
Yeah.
But it's just great that we can go out together. So I'm proud of the way he handled me, you know, lightening up the tour without him and finishing number one.
Thanks.
That can't have been easy.
Being really nice to me today.
It's an emotional day.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't easy being on the couch, not knowing if you're ever going to play, and then watching your bro who you shared every record with pull ahead. But Mike was great. I mean, if he was cocky, I would have just buried him, you know. But he was pretty humble about the whole thing, and you know, he was clear about the fact that he was gonna wait for me and try to, you know, play this season together. But yeah.
Well, because at no point would you have ever wanted to play a part. At no point in your career did you guys even consider it trying different partners.
No, we never once considered breaking up and looking for another partner. We've had, you know, so much heartbreak during our career, and we remember those more than the wins sometimes. And, you know, 14 Grand Slam finals we've lost, and those are tough. You know, you walk around like a zombie for a week after one of those. And but yeah, not once did we go talk about it with someone else in the locker room or another player, or look over our shoulder and, you know, try to find a greener pasture. It was always a package deal. We were sticking it out. And so happy that we're going to be able to retire together. You know, that's what we started together.
You guys have left a lasting impact on the game, not just doubles, everything. how will anyone ever, how will the game survive without you? Have you,
it's almost like fine. Yeah. You're only as good as your last match, and they're quick to forget. We've been off the tour, and the tour's doing just fine right now. Tournaments are happening. You know,
the records, I think cannot, there's no way. 118 titles.
We've been lucky to stay healthy and you know, to play this many tournaments and to win a little bit and to do together for this many years. And tennis has been really good to us. We're grateful if we've left a little mark or we've left the campsite cleaner. That was my dad's quote. To throw that in there, then we're happy, you know. So, yeah, look, we're very blessed to have it go like this.
Where do you hope doubles will go in the years that you guys are not playing? When you look in 10 years, how do you hope it to? Because sometimes it's frustrating to see doubles get a little bit pushed out of the spotlight, scheduling wise, money wise, everything.
Yeah. I mean, look, singles has the spotlight, has the prize money, and you know, the casual sports fan is watching singles. The hardcore tennis fan watches doubles. You know, sometimes, you know, it can get in a trend where, you know, you need to reset it. I think 2005, there was that time where we needed to kind of check what was going on at the top of the game and figure it out. And doubles is doing great now, and we're very happy with the trajectory of it. And we'll just keep our eye on it. And if there's something we can do to give it a little boost down the road, we'll be the first ones there to do a clinic or do an appearance and try to help out, you know, because we love the sport.
It's 2021. What are you looking forward to most to be able to do?
I mean, we've pretty much been on a plane every week for the last 21 years. So maybe wake up in my own bed for more than 5 days in a row and check my sleep tracker and see that I got 8 hours of sleep. A good sleep would be nice. Yeah, I mean, our minds are always churning to try to figure out ways to get better. I'm always like, okay, right after this podcast, we got to go hit some balls, Bob, because, you know, we got next year. Maybe, like, put the rackets in the closet for a little while and just freshen up. And then just be with our families, and I'm going to have a baby. I'm going to be changing a lot of diapers. Probably won't be getting that 8 hours of sleep. 8 hours of sleep, there's no way.
Yeah, playing on the tour is like having, like, a homework assignment due.
Yeah.
You're always thinking about that paper that you gotta work to do.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's nice to go on a vacation and not have, like, a price tag attached to it, you know. You take 4 days off, you lose a little cardio, you know, you lose a little strength. You're always thinking about who's working while I'm enjoying life. So that price tag will go away, which will be nice.
Should we let you guys go to practice?
Yeah, let's go. Let's go work.
Okay. All right. Thank you guys so much for joining us. This is awesome.
Great to be here.
Thanks, guys.
From the Tennis Channel Podcast Network, this has been the Tennis.com Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to stay caught up. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and every major listening app, as well as tennis.com/podcasts. We're your hosts, Nina Pantic and Irina Falcone. We'd like to thank our team, editor and audio designer Luke Mahoney, producers Alexa March and Sean O'Malley, and executive producers Shelby Coleman, Kyle Einhorn, and Andy Chu.